Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Frank Film Club. I'm Maisie Williams and I'm an actor and producer.
I'm Larry Roberts and I'm a producer and filmmaker.
I'm Hannah Marie Williams and I'm a casting director.
And welcome to our club. Hello everyone and welcome back to Frank Film Club, where today we're going to be speaking about The Zone of Interest, which was written and directed by Jonathan Glazer, and it is based on a novel by the same name by Martin Amis. It is starring Christian Friedel and Sandra Hüller, and it is about the commandant of Auschwitz, Rudolf Huss, and his wife Hedwig, and it follows them as they strive to build a dream life for their family in a house and garden right next to the camp. At the time of recording this, you can watch it in the cinema, but I'm not sure where it's going after this. Coming up in this episode, we're going to be talking about Jonathan Glazer's visual storytelling and the cinematography style that he likes to use in all of his movies. We're going to talk about the narrative structure and how they juxtapose this with the themes of the movie. And we're also going to touch on the audience reception and the controversy around this movie. But before we dive into this, let's have a catch up. What have you both been up to?
Nothing that interesting, to be honest. Just working at the moment. It's all been quite busy, but things are good. Nothing major to report. What about you?
The only real update I've got for you since last week is that Daisy now is waking up at 5:30 every morning. Oh. And that is just the norm now, because before sometimes she'd wake up at 7 and then she'd wake up at like 4 a.m. And now we've settled. She's like, 5:30 is it for me. Mm. So we've been doing that, which is okay. At least I know what time I'm getting up, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. Sunny sleeps outside my bedroom door and he wakes me up about 5:30 in the morning to come and get on the bed.
Ah, our babies are the same.
Yeah. Something about 5:30. Maybe like it's when the sun starts to peak. I don't know. Well, she's in a blackout room though, no?
No, she's not.
Well, that's good.
She's still in our room.
Because I think sunrise is about 6:30 at the moment. So right.
Brighter days.
Yeah, brighter days.
They are coming.
Spring is here.
Yeah. And how are you?
Yeah, good. Really good. Other than my dog waking me up at 5:30 in the morning. No, yeah, really good. Back with my pup and I'm just loving it. He's being hilarious always and very cute. He actually recently got a really cute haircut. It makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Who trims him. Some people just do not do him justice. No. There are times when he can look like severely crusty and I just feel like I have a crusty white dog. And then there are other times when he looks very like Bichon Frise or they're kind of crusty. He looks, you know, just cute. He looks like a toy you'd buy in a shop. Yeah. And yeah, those are the days where at 5:30 I'm like, come on.
But not if you look like a Bichon Frise.
Yeah, I'm like, oh. No, I'm joking. Well, I'm glad to hear that you've both had a good week. Mm-hmm. Really, really glad to be chatting about this film. I'm a big fan of Jonathan Glazer's work, and this particular film has been just had like a lot of, you know, a lot of people have had a lot to say about it online. Mm-hmm. I think that the themes are very topical. And I guess, first of all, we all watched this together at the cinema. Yeah. Just a couple of days ago. I mean, I feel like I know your initial thoughts, but for everyone listening at home, maybe you could talk a little bit about how that felt walking out of the screening.
This film was harrowing. And I think I used that word when we spoke about The Iron Claw a few weeks ago. And then when watching this film, I was like, I feel like I've massively misused that word there, because this was harrowing. And yeah, made me feel awful. And I'm glad that it made me feel awful. I just think it's a really, it was really powerful filmmaking and storytelling. A really important story. I'm excited to chat about it more because I'm not going to lie, I don't think I did follow the story of what was happening to the family because my mind was just somewhere else, which I thought was interesting in itself. But yeah, heavy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so glad to have seen it. Mm. And so glad that Jonathan Glazer has made this for so many people to see.
Yeah, same. Mm. What an experience. So we were recording and we all went to see it afterwards. And when we're recording, as if you've listened to any of our other episodes, like it's quite like a energetic back and forth. And we had a really great day. And then we went to see that. And I think I was really stressed earlier in the day as well. We went to see that. And then it really affected me into the next day. And I haven't stopped thinking about it since. Just for so many reasons. And I felt that in the cinema. The whole cinema felt that way at the end of the film.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm so glad that I feel that way. And I'm so glad that this has been seen by a lot of people. And it's also getting so much traction with awards. And Oscars will have happened by then. I don't know what is nominated for that. But obviously did really well at the BAFTAs. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think coming out of this movie, I felt just cold and like, you know, awful. Just for how it made me reflect on the world now. And I think that it is really incredible filmmaking and storytelling because of the visceral response that it gives you. And so I'm really interested today to talk about both the subject matter and also the filmmaking sort of side of things and like try and separate those two things, which is very hard in today's world with everything that we have going on. But yeah, I'm really intrigued to do that with the both of you. I do want to start off by saying that some viewers and critics have raised concerns about the film's use of dark humor, which I wasn't really getting so much in watching it. And I think that that can be read two different ways, to be honest with you. But yeah, and also sort of looking at Nazi characters in a sympathetic light. This wasn't really my take on it at all. But what I did really appreciate was looking at, like, not sensationalizing these people and looking at them as people and, like, still having that held up right next to, like, the blatant evil and violence that's, like, going on in the walls around them. I just wanted to know if either of you had that feeling where you felt this was handled in the wrong way for whatever reason.
Definitely not, because, and this was the exact reason why it hit so much with me, is that they are, even the way that it's shot, right? We're just seeing them as themselves in their own environment. I don't think that there was dark comedy in there. I think it was just human experience, and you see everything that that might mean. Mm-hmm. Was that about like the characterization? Like, I don't know, some parts of Sandra Hüller's performance, was it about that or?
I can't find specifically, but I think, yeah, I think it's just like, you know, I think because it's told in such a frank way where you see people interacting day to day, and our most of our reference points and depictions of Nazi officers in film and television does feel hugely sensationalized and this caricature of evil. But the nuance of evil is how we get to these really dark places in humanity. It's not as simple as like someone being a very, very clear enemy. That's how these people get followed. Yeah. And that's how these horrible atrocities can carry out. And so, yeah, I think that it's just quite different to the way that we've seen like Nazi officers depicted on screen. And that has felt like some sort of like trivial humor to it. But I yeah, I think it's more nuanced than that. I think it's more powerful than that because of how awful the film still makes you feel.
Yeah. And because of that as well, then it really makes you look at yourself in a way that's like, who is complicit? She's complicit and she's benefiting from it. Who is complicit in government? Who is complicit in society? Am I complicit? Like, how do you like draw that line? And I think that's why it is important for it to be shown in this way. And I think it's been a really impact, a big impact in showing it like that.
Mm. Yeah. I actually didn't pick up on any of the... I actually didn't follow the story of the family like at all, yeah, really. And I don't know if that was what Jonathan Glazer wanted. I presume not, because why would you... I don't imagine that he would have wanted me or his audience to not understand actually what was going on.
Mm.
I don't think he failed, because it still like stuck with me so much. And I think I think the concept of the film and the way that he's told the story, which I'm sure we'll get into properly in a bit, mm-hmm, in a minute, like had me gripped the whole way through, despite it being so quiet and slow. I mean, not knowing what the story was, because I was just like so like gobsmacked.
Mm.
It still just like worked. And
yeah,
and I just like, I find that really mad and really impressive. But also, I don't think that would have been intentional. Was it intentional?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay.
So this, as I said, has been adapted from a novel to the screen. And the book by Martin Amis, I was researching it, and the story in that book is, I don't think that they even use these real officers' names. It's like fictional story of someone who runs a camp, and he runs it with his wife. But it's actually about another general who really fancies his wife. And it's sort of more of, I think he ends up like killing the wife or something like that. It's like a fictional tale of, it's in the same setting,
yeah,
but it's like, you know, it, from what I was reading, it felt like Big Little Lies kind of thing, like of, but it's just in this setting that's like a time and place in history that we do know so much about, but they're telling another story. And what Jonathan Glazer's done is removed basically all of the plot of that book, taken the setting, put it back into the real parts of history. I don't know what you can remember like from the story, but really the story that Jonathan Glazer has told is that he has a consults with a guy about these ovens, and then he gets a job promotion, and then he like goes to a different place and the wife wants to stay. That's all that happens in this movie.
Right.
And I think in removing the plot and this like... the narrative, what he's done instead is through all sorts of incredible techniques, like I want to talk about the audioscape of this movie, is taking like a snapshot or a tableau of these people's lives with, you know, decision making that people can relate to, in that like you want to protect your family, or like you like job promotion, or like these very like normal things, but you've put them into a very real place that, that like would have existed at that time, but we've like never seen that side of it.
Mm.
And yeah, I think that's like a decision that he's made. I wonder if you think that it's a good one, because immediately when I was reading the synopsis or like the, you know, information about this novel, I just felt immediately like if he'd have told that story, it would have been like,
yeah,
just like, what are we doing telling that story? I just think it was so powerful how he, yeah, took the setting, took the people, put it in reality, but then just sort of like, yeah, built that blatant evil and violence that surrounds their beautiful, pristine life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I think I did follow the plot, and it didn't occur to me that the absence of anything really like dramatic happening in that sense didn't really, it wasn't something that I took away from it, but you're so right. Like it wasn't.
They fish.
That, you know, yeah. Mm.
The kids play in the pool.
Yeah.
That's all that happens in this movie.
But it was the absence of things that made this much more powerful for me.
Mm.
And how mundane, mundane, you know, their lives were seemingly with the sound and with those, like, you know, the train going past at the top of the frame and things like that, and the absence of actually seeing it, which made it so much more sinister for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it actually makes me like sick to my stomach, and even more sick to my stomach that, like, shit like this is happening right now.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening in the world today. And it makes me feel so stupid.
Yeah.
With everything, like, that. It like feels like a mirror of what society, like of the world right now, which is horrific. And I'm so glad that it's been made for that reason. But at this, but obviously that it's just like, I don't know what to do with that.
Well, we are unknowing and helpless. And what can you do?
Mm.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I actually gonna go a little off piece here and jump straight to a quote from The Guardian, which is from Sandra Hüller, who played Hedwig. And she said, I think it's the same sort of applies for a lot of German actors where they're constantly playing like Nazis. And I think when this film is pitched, it can sound like it's from the perspective of the Husses. Is that how we're saying it? With an umlaut? Husses. Husses. Mm. And she was like, I don't want to make that movie. Like, why are we doing that? No one needs to, you know, hear it from their perspective. But upon meeting Jonathan, this is a quote. Upon meeting Jonathan, I realized it wasn't actually about the Husses. It was about people ignoring terrible things right where they live. A film to make us unsafe in the cinema, as we should be. We should ask this. Is this also us? Do we do this too?
Yeah.
Do we do this every single day?
Mm. Yeah, and that's...
That's why the film's really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the credits were going up, I was like, especially the part with where it cuts to, you know, and maybe I'm getting ahead of.
No, I mean, yeah, let's go there.
Like we go and visit places like that as an act of tourism.
Yeah,
when it cuts to
the shoes and the, but also they're cleaning.
Yeah,
a place, you know, day to day. It's just like, what are we cleaning here?
Yeah.
Because it's like the things that happened in this, you know what I mean? No, I just, yeah. I thought that the choice for it to be people cleaning and opening, yeah, that just really hit me.
Yeah. Because, like, it's a spectacle.
Yeah. Totally. And it's just like the history is, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
it really makes you question so many things. And just like how we, not even just what's going on right now, but also how we deal with history, what things that have happened, like what is being shown in this film.
Yeah, the Holocaust.
Like the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do we, like, do we even deal with that in the right way, the way that we look back on it? Or do we, like, I don't think we do. In the arts as well, and yeah. Like what's commercialized,
mm-hmm.
It feels like it's not right.
Because we, as humanity, still keep making the same mistakes. So, like, it's not breaking us out of a cycle in any way. It's definitely like processing it in lots of different ways. But yeah, touching still on sort of seeing. Yeah, the choice to show like Nazi generals as humans with layered lives outside of the evil actions that we remember through history. I think one of the, so I was part of the TV show The New Look, which is set during a similar time. And I think a lot of the depictions of the Nazi characters in that, it was like a constant back and forth about how much to glamorize or sensationalize how this is. But there was so much that is just straight from like firsthand accounts that I understand why this image has been created of like the Nazi general who's like, you know what I mean? Like, it, yeah, because it is just, you know, they did have diamond encrusted like jackets and like they just ruled, you know, everything. But it doesn't affect us as an audience or like want to push change in the way that a film like this does, even though this kind of strips a lot of that back. I think that it's like far more powerful, and I've never seen something like this.
Yeah,
about that time. Well, that I've seen so much about.
Yeah, exactly. It makes it feel very much more, for want of a better word, real. Like, you know the shot where she's trying on the fur coat and then you realise where the fur coat's come from?
Yeah.
Like, if they had done a shot where they go in on the hand and they go in like a close-up of her putting the lipstick on and then they like, in a, you know, it wouldn't have given the same impact of her just trying it on. Pulling out the lipstick and then putting it on the table.
Mm.
It really makes you like look at.
Yeah, I feel like he's taken everything that we do know, have seen, like are aware of, and he's told a story like in between the cracks of all of that.
Yeah.
And all of those parts are for you to fill in the blanks because we know the truth.
Yeah.
But he's sort of, yeah, built something like in between that in this view of this house that we've never seen with like the rows and rows and rows of like accommodations, like chambers or whatever. It's like it exists so close to every image we've seen before, but we've never seen this one.
Yeah.
And that is also so present in the audioscape, as I said before, and the fact that you never really leave the house. Like, there's one shot, I think, you know, that when they're in the stream, and then also when
we follow the girl,
the little girl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. But yeah, this kind of that he's, shown the part that we've not seen before, and it's just like surrounded by everything that we do know.
Yeah.
Which I think is just very powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, let's talk about the girl and the fact that it was shot. What is it? Yeah, is it like heat camera, I think? It's like playing with heat, but it comes directly after we see Rudolph reading an altered version of Hansel and Gretel to his kids. And in that story, it's like it's very shrouded in what's happening in Germany at the time. And, you know, when the people are bad, you starve them. And it's like all this whole indoctrination to, like, you know, and a very real thing that happened at that time. But it cuts dramatically to the girl, and it feels like it's a continuation of the story, but she's leaving a trail of apples in the mud for people to eat versus, like, punishing. But yeah, they did that at night in the dark. They couldn't even have moonlight. They had to sort of block the whole thing off to give that image. And then they did alter it slightly in post to make her even brighter and the food even brighter. But the girl is based on real events recounted to Jonathan Glazer by an elderly woman who was a young girl during this time and had left food in the open mines near Auschwitz for the prisoners. Yeah, so he put it in the movie.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like it's just another layer to the reality of what was happening, and maybe parts that we haven't seen or been shown before.
Yeah.
But very real things that, you know, people would have done.
There's an amazing cast director called Lucy Pardee. She cast Rocks and American Henny. She's incredible. And she served as a researcher on this film. So they are, well, obviously they would, but it's so interesting to hear that must be one detail that they, you know, used out of all of that research that they must have done around this film for detail.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this film shows the importance of a soundscape, of sound in filmmaking, and how much story sound can tell. Because I think the sounds in this film tell more than what I thought the visuals told.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredible.
Definitely.
Yeah.
What really scared me, and I was watching, when we were watching this film and I was feeling so many things, was that I would drop out of the sounds. And then I would drop back into them. And it just made me realize how, you become...
desensitized.
Yeah. To things.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Which is, of course, that must be what this family and these families happened. Because sometimes when we were watching it and I was like, how are you still carrying on your conversation right now? Like, I cannot fathom how you are. But it's so true. Like you just said... they're listening to it all the time.
Yeah.
It just becomes like
life.
Just it's what they're used to.
This is not like the right comparison to make at all, but think how quickly you adapt to things that you're given and that's the way that things are, and how much we do that all the time. Like lockdown, we were like, cool, we'll go for one walk a day. Like that was totally normal within 2 weeks. That was just like the norm. So it's scary to me how adaptable we are because of things like this you know, what else are we adapting to that is like completely wrong? Mm-hmm. You have to like constantly be checking yourself. Like, am I aware of what I'm doing and like how I'm being led by the media or that I'm being led by things that I'm consuming on social media and stuff like that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've got to make up your own mind. But like, how do you make up your own mind when everything is so conflicting and just,
Yeah.
But that really, I just felt, again, just felt so guilty when I left the cinema after watching this.
Yeah. Yeah. That we just sat in the cinema and watched that and like...
ate our stupid popcorn.
I know, I just felt so disgusted. And then we just left and then carried on with our lives. And I'm like, that's so grim. So grim. Yeah.
Someone who's not a stranger to Jonathan Glazer's movies, Micah Levy did the music.
Yes, I spotted on the credits. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Very, very minimal, but very powerful.
That's a cool collaboration for sure.
Yeah.
Who is that?
That's who did Monos. Actually did like Zola.
Oh,
as
wow.
Well.
And Under the Skin.
Wow. Okay.
Iconic.
Yeah,
maybe they do
absolutely.
Under the Skin as well.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I hadn't realised that. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So for shooting this, there were parts of this that were improvised and parts that were scripted. But in terms of the, like being on set for the actors, they rigged 10 cameras within a replica that they'd built of their house. And the director and the focus puller and everyone would be like completely separate in another place, and they would just let them move around and film, you know, takes for like, you know, minutes and minutes and minutes.
Wow. So lots of rehearsal, or probably? Is it improvised mostly, or?
Some improvised and some not. Mm. Rehearsal, not sure.
It's so weird to talk about performance in something like this, because you, maybe because you're so far away from their face as well. It's so much about like their physicality and you're not like, it's not like, even though it is a study like of these people, it doesn't feel like that's...
It's not like intimate.
Yeah, it's not intimate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which I really like as a stylistic choice, because I feel like the boundaries are always, like the boundaries of the frame are always the boundaries of their reality in a way. You know what I mean? Like you just see enough that, you know, it builds that thing. But you also don't get intimate in them. Like you don't want to identify with these people or care, like, you know, about the... you know, things in their life, but you do want to see how they're trying to navigate that within their little reality of the grander picture that we know. It's like, it's so literal in the way that it's shot.
Mm.
I don't feel like I've ever actually derived that from a film that I've watched before. You know what I mean? Like, understood the choices and how it impacts the story in the way in that I can such, with this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great one to study, like for filmmaking, it's like a great one to study, you know. When Jonathan Glazer's just... Yeah, he does.
It's funny that, like you say, that it feels weird to talk about the performances, when actually, because of all those reasons that you've just said, and like we can see that we can see everything that they're doing. The camera is not manipulating their performances at all. So their performances are actually
the purest it could be. Yeah, yeah.
And that's a really big part of it. But I know what you mean. I do feel weird talking about the performances in this. But they must have been amazing performances, because we were all fooled.
Yeah.
And the camera is not manipulating it at all.
Totally.
Very funny. Organic.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Something that the cinematographer said, the most important thing was not to aestheticize. And so all of the light is natural light sources, and they, even the color correction, all they did was make it flatter. They didn't want to manipulate the image in any way. Like they built the sets, they, you know, put the people in there, and then they shot it from afar.
That's so funny. It feels so stylized to me.
Mm.
But obviously, yeah.
I think it's just the sun.
Yeah. Mm. And I think the gardens, like the set, the design is all so intricate.
Yeah.
But if, yeah.
Yeah, but it's an exact replica of the house.
You're joking. You're joking. Yeah.
So this was set on an actual real life family that lived in this.
Exactly.
Did you already say this? I'm sorry if you did and I just missed that.
Well, I sort of touched on it and sort of didn't.
Right.
But yes, the book is about
based on
fictional people.
Right.
Jonathan Glazer has made it about Auschwitz. No. I think it's Auschwitz. Oh,
yeah, it is.
It's Auschwitz and the actual commandant that operated it,
and that was our actual
and that's
house.
The Husses, yeah, and that was the actual, and they built it just feet from where the remain is today.
Wow.
Yeah,
wait, for the to film it,
mm-hmm, like a whole replica of the house.
But then they must have built up the because Auschwitz probably doesn't look still like that.
No,
right?
I think that's CGI there.
Okay.
But they filmed it like in that.
Oh my God.
So they shot it in Auschwitz?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know. Yeah, that seems like mad. Wow. I don't know how I feel about that.
I know.
Yeah, whoa.
But then in comes that end of the movie and choosing for that peephole, like looking down the hallway, references what's happening and how they're... references Jonathan Glazer himself making this movie. You know, I just think it was like, yeah, a powerful moment. And yeah, I don't know what's morally right. I don't, but what I do know is that I am like looking at this, the world right now, myself, like with a bigger magnifying glass than I was before I watched this. And so is that a good thing? Even though it's filmed in the place and there's about the, you know, it's like there's so many layers to that, I think. This picked up the BAFTA for Best British Film and also Best Film in a Foreign Language. And I think that's the first time that that's ever happened. Greedy. but yeah, I mean, we were there at the BAFTAs and just saw the like praise for everyone who made this movie and felt immediately like, oh, I can't believe I haven't seen it. I need to watch it. And it feels like a great time for it. Also feels like a difficult time for it because I feel like everyone's going to take from this what they want to take.
Yeah.
You know, I think people are going to want to sit on their side of.
Yeah. And also what it is about in a way and who it is persecuting in the Holocaust and then how that is now related to what is happening right now and what somebody might, how this might affect somebody in a different way than maybe it would have done before that, you know?
Yeah, I want to think that people come away from this movie looking at the world now the way that it has affected me and like, but people could come away and think the exact opposite.
That's fucking mad though.
I know, it's insane, but
like, for someone to come away from this and not think, why can't the world stop killing people?
Innocent people.
Innocent people. Well, people, like, stop killing people. Like, that is fucked up. And that makes me lose faith in humanity. I can't fathom people not coming away from this film feeling sick about innocent people being killed.
Mm-hmm. I know. But they will. Okay, so great to unpack with you both. What are your final thoughts?
I really think that Jonathan Glazer has done such an amazing job at making, well, all three of us here, but I'm sure a lot of people take away something which will stick in people's brains from a film. It's really hard to do that. And I think the techniques that he's used, if we're going to speak about it like that, have really helped that. But there's just something in his filmmaking anyway that is very memorable. And I'm just glad that he's applied it to something so important. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just feel awful. And I did when I watched it, and I feel awful talking about it now. And, but I'm glad that we did chat about it because it's important.
Yeah, agree. I'm so glad that we've spoken about it because it's not an easy chat. It's so easy. It's way easy to chat about a film that's fun to talk about. And I think, yeah. So I'm really, really glad that we've spoken about this, as horrible as it has been. Mm-hmm. But yeah, an amazing film for like the most horrible reasons. Yeah.
If you've been affected by any of the topics that we have discussed in this episode and you would like to donate to organisations who are doing great work all around the world at the moment, then we can recommend donating to Save the Children, Doctors Without Borders and War Child.
Thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode of Frank Film Club. Next week, we're going to be talking about The Holdovers, which was directed by Alexander Payne. And you can watch it, rent or buy it on Amazon or on Apple TV or wherever you rent or buy your films. So go and watch, get a cup of hot chocolate or bowl of soup and then join us back here next week.
This podcast was presented by Wrapped.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.